The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And on today's program, coming up, we'll have a live performance in our studio by a duo of brothers who are the band Manzanita Bones from Old Hickory, Tennessee. They're going to be playing tomorrow night at Memphis on Main, along with Nioga Blacksmith and the Devout Sinners. So that's coming up a little later. First up, though, we'll have the director and some of the actors from the current production at Parkland Theater, Parkland College in Champaign. It's called Frozen, and very complicated, profound, somewhat difficult topic, which we'll be talking about. We'll also be talking about the fact that it's Randy Hard's final play as artistic director of Parkland Theater. That's coming up in just a few moments here on Live and Local. Stay tuned. That was a tune called Half Nelson by Miles Davis, as performed by and arranged for a group called Uccello, which is a bunch of cellists, students of Matt Heimovitz, who's the lead cellist there. All arrangements on this particular CD, which is called Meeting of the Spirits by David Sanford, and heard on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our first segment on the show today has to do with the current production at Parkland College Theater, which opens, I believe, this weekend, right?
Next Wednesday.
I'm actually looking for the dates here, and I'm not finding them, but I'm sure you have them all.
Oh, yes.
And that was the voice of Randy, Jennifer Collins Hard, to use all of her names, as she is artistic director of Parkland Theater, has been for 20 years.
At Parkland for roughly 26 years. Yeah.
And including teaching theater for those first number of years, and is retiring after this season, and this is the last play she's directing at Parkland. By no means the last play she's directing, period. That won't be true. And also with us we have three of the cast members from that production, which is called Frozen. And say the name of the playwright for me.
Bryony Lavery.
Okay, I'm glad I tried the first name earlier, and I was half right. I got the accent in the right syllable, but I said something else. Bryony Lavery. Who is Bryony Lavery?
She is a female playwright from England, and is pretty much unknown. She's only written a couple of plays, this being her most famous.
And famous to the point where it has won some awards.
Absolutely, it opened in England around the turn of this century and was very popular there, and then moved to Broadway around 2004, was nominated for a number of Tony Awards and actually won the Tony Award for Best Actor.
And I was going to ask you a particular question, which I got the answer to in reading the News Gazette yesterday, and that was why you picked this as your last play, but I gather you didn't actually pick it to be your last play.
Well, we put together a season, and I'm always looking for a balanced season, as is this one. And my particular contribution, I wanted it to be something in a style and a genre that I really like to work in, and this is that. So I wasn't thinking about it as my last play at Parkland, but a good play to do, and a good play to be my last play.
So we haven't talked about the style. What is that then?
It is a psychological drama. It is for people who really enjoy sinking their teeth into learning about characters, elements of mystery, elements of a thriller, but technically the genre is a psychological drama. It's told in both a series of monologues and scenes. So the th- three main characters in the play and a prison guard who has no lines. We get to know these characters very well, and they're intertwined and brought together in really unusual and unique circumstances.
One of the folks here at WILL sent me an email. Well, I had it when I came in this morning because I'd sent around the promo for this particular show and said, "You know what this play is about, don't you? You know, sure you want to talk about that on the radio?" And I said, "Well, I know a little bit of what it's about, and I'm not sure why one should shy away from it, but you and Parkland have never particularly shied away from difficult topics."
Well, no, we haven't. And this is no more difficult of a topic than people are dealing with day to day on the television news. It's basically the story of a serial killer of children, a man who has killed seven children, assaulted and killed them, the mother of one of those children, and a forensic psychiatrist who is studying this man. No children are harmed in the making of this production.
What about adults?
Questionable. Yeah. No. Well, it is. It's really a sink your teeth into it. Mystery and psychological drama. It asks a lot of questions, like, are people like Ralph Wantage, who is the serial killer? Are they inherently evil, or do they have an illness? Is this kind of an act forgivable, even by the mother of one of the children that he's killed? And so we travel through time and observe the interactions of these characters. And especially climactic is the moment when 20 years after the murder, the mother, whose life has really been altered, obviously, by this killer, goes to visit him.
And there are real-life stories where that sort of thing
happens. Absolutely. And one of the things that I've been harping on a little bit is, yes, people, it might be a little bit uncomfortable at times, you know, to deal with this subject, but we really need to deal with it because the statistics are just appalling. The last statistic that I heard is that one out of every four female children are either abused or murdered or sexually or physically assaulted. One out of every five male children are. And that tells me, and the statistics are getting worse, and that tells me this is not something we want to talk about. And it's not something we want to address even with our children. We just sort of cross our fingers and hope it doesn't happen to us. So while I don't want to be too didactic or political, this play gets you to thinking about the subject in not too difficult to take.
Well, I read in that same article in the News Gazette where you talked with help me on her name,
Melissa Murley.
Yeah, sorry, Melissa. Where you said, you know, people watch this stuff on TV all the time, like NCIS and crime scene investigation and all those sorts of things, and that's entertainment. But maybe the question is, you know, do you go out and pay for entertainment that is difficult?
You
pay for cable. That's right.
And why not? It's a drama, and I don't know. Maybe there are people that don't like a good drama, but I sure do. And I think that people who come and see this will be really pleasantly surprised at how engaging it is and how interesting and a little bit frightening, but the characters are just amazingly interesting.
And people. You said it's not depressing.
I don't think it's depressing at all. I think it's very reality oriented, but more engaging than depressing. I don't feel depressed when it's over. Mm-hmm. I feel engaged. I feel like I want to talk about it. I feel like I want to say, why did this character do this, and why did she do that? And that's an interesting drama to me.
And I'm going to guess that it's draining for the actors.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Well, that's unanimous. The actors are, who are with us, anyway, the three speaking roles, as the – what is your character? Agnetha, is that her?
Agnetha Gottman's daughter. She's a criminal psychiatrist.
And Jeanette Jerzyk.
Correct.
As Ralph, who is the serial killer.
Yes.
Brad Mertens.
Hello.
And as the mother of the victim in question for this particular story, Diane Pritchard.
Yes, as Nancy Shirley.
We have a few scenes. Why don't we start with one of them? Does it come towards the front of things?
Yes, it's sort of a great introductory scene. This is the forensic psychiatrist speaking to an organization in England about her thesis.
The title of my thesis is Serial Killing, a Forgivable Act, and it is a critical examination of the differences between crimes of evil and crimes of illness. I will base my critique upon a psychiatric and neurological study of the criminal brain of men who have received the death sentence over the past 10 years for their crimes in the U.S., plus my present casework here in England, where, of course, you have abolished the death penalty.
And that's the intro.
Yes.
And as we get into this a little farther,
we find out that Nancy Shirley's daughter, 10-year-old Rona, has gone missing. And in this monologue, she's been missing a year, and tomorrow is her birthday. So she's gone into her room.
It's bad today because it's Rona's birthday tomorrow, and they say missing children often phone on their birthdays, get in touch. So I thought, clean her room. Her nature table's a bit dusty. Give me something to do. When she comes back, everything will be nice. Everything will be same. Everything familiar. I don't want anyone in here moving her things around. I want to keep it exactly as it was. If I have to get Bob to put a lock on that door, I will. Rona, where are you? I know you're somewhere.
Diane, I have a question for you just because I know you better than any of the other folks in this room, and I've worked with you in a couple other shows of completely different character.
Yeah.
You know, you're most often in musicals.
That's right.
Seems to me. How often have you had the chance to delve into a role like this one?
I have never had a role as deep and complex as this one. I have 12 monologues in this play, plus a few scenes. It's more material than I have ever memorized in my life, possibly all put together.
And how's it going for you psychologically?
After I got over the initial 2 days of quaking in my shoes and wondering what I had gotten myself into, which was back in December when we got our scripts, it's gone surprisingly well. And I have to credit Randy for being such a fantastic director and helping to guide me and shape me through this role.
And how have you found preparing yourself for it different than from preparing for some of the other roles you've been in?
It strikes far too close to home. I have kids myself. This is a mother's worst nightmare, to have her child walk off to grandma's and never come back. I work at a school where occasionally students are marked absent who are present in school. We call the parents to find out where they are. The parents immediately, like, are frantic. I know I dropped my child off, and we check and they're there, but there's always that moment of fear and fright. And I've had to really separate my character from myself so that it doesn't make me crazy while I allow Nancy to completely explore this experience.
I know as a musician, I've heard people say, well, as a conductor, I've heard people say that if you allow yourself, and I guess I've heard opera singers say this too, that if you allow yourself to cry, really cry from your point of view, you won't be able to perform the role. You can cry in the role. But if you are overcome with personal emotion, then you got a problem.
I think that's true. And there are parts, as Nancy, where the tears do come, and it's totally from within Nancy. And I think the other characters may have some of those moments, too.
Jeanette, what? This is the first I've met you. I've met the other
two
before.
Nice to meet you, Kevin.
Yeah, nice to meet you, exactly. Have you been in shows at Parkland before?
No, this is my first show at Parkland. I actually went to U of I and got my BFA in theater in the early 90s. So I've done shows at Krannert as well as the Station Theater. And then I lived in New York and Los Angeles as an actor and moved back to the Champaign area in 2009. So I've done some stuff with the Station Theater, but this is my first Parkland production, and it's been a really amazing experience.
Yeah, quite a play to jump into for first. Excuse me. The next scene comes from
we're going to go back to Nancy, the moment that everyone dreads when the police knock on the door.
4 days ago, phone call from the police. They think they have some news for us. Can they come over? Terrible, terrible restlessness, anxiety. Then two young policemen, lads, one with fine soft hair like a kiddie's, other lovely polished shoes, pitch up, say, we have apprehended a man in the unsuccessful attempted abduction of a young girl. Subsequent inquiries have uncovered a lockup shed. The earth floor contains the remains of other children. The man is now giving us names. One of them, he says, is Rona.
So there you go.
Yeah.
That would be one of those moments where,
yes,
do you give yourself over to the character? Do you give yourself over to Diane? Not the latter.
Yeah. No. It's definitely the character and her shock. It's 20 years later. She truly has believed that her child is still alive. In her mind, she's been growing her up. But to have that final confirmation that, no, she's really gone, it's a horrible moment.
Which is something you do see all the time in some of these television shows, mm-hmm, and movies and so on. Movies, for some reason, I choose not to go out and see those myself. Just I don't know why. Television shows I'll sometimes watch. We're talking about the play Frozen by Brian E. Lavery, which is at Parkland Theater, opening next Wednesday, and it runs through the 29th. I found all the dates finally. They just were on the second page of my info here. Parkland Theater in Champaign, and Jennifer Hart is Randy Hart is the director. It's her last play at Parkland as artistic director there. And the Wednesday shows are often either the freebies or the discounted ones, or what's
the
deal with those?
We have two special nights. Our opening night, which we used to call a preview, but it was really opening night, is, pardon me, I have the same cold everyone else has, next Wednesday, January 18th. And it's pay what you can. You literally can come and put a penny down at the ticket office and get a ticket. Most people pay the regular ticket price. Some people give us actually a donation and more money. But it's our opportunity to say, hey, everyone in the area who wants to see excellent theater has an opportunity to do it, whether they have the money or not. And the following weekend, our second weekend, which is Thursday, the 26th, is 2-for-1. So if you haven't experienced the Parkland Theater, take a friend to the theater for free. And I think you'll have a great experience. We are so user-friendly. You don't need to pick up your tickets in advance. All you need to do is either go online and order reservations for the night you want, or give us a call, 351-2528, and tell us how many and what night, and your tickets will be waiting for you when you arrive. No need to traipse on out in the snow to Parkland to pick them up. We guarantee we'll have the tickets for you waiting.
We have, I think, a fourth scene, because our serial killer has been lying in wait here.
Yes, he has. I'm sure you're all waiting to hear from Brad, who is astonishing in this performance. And I know a lot of people in town have seen Brad in everything from musicals to Charlie Brown. he's quite exceptional as this very, very interesting and creepy character. In this scene, a psychiatrist, Agneta, is basically doing an examination of him and trying to get him to open up about his life and why he does these things.
You have a little limp there, Ralph.
No.
Yes, I think so. Ralph, don't stand behind me.
It frightens you?
No. They stop us meeting if you... Just come in front of me. Let me see this limp.
No limp.
Can you hop on just the right leg for just a short time? Good. Now the left.
Oh!
Okay. You're just proving something for me. No big deal. Come, sit down. Talk to me. I was just going to ask, how did you get that scar?
This? I fell off a roof. Blacked out. Yeah. Oh, boy. I was pissed. I was getting away from someone, and it just over and whack! Oh, didn't break nothing, but just this, like, lump came up big as an egg.
And how old were you?
About 18, probably. Yeah. No. This came from a car. And we were in this car, right? We took it out for a burn, yeah? And we went whack right into this wall, yeah? Well, I wasn't driving, obviously, but I go smack, seat in front.
This was when you were...
I was 16. Blood all in my eye. Couldn't see anything when we left. Oh, that was... No, oh, hey, wait. Give us your hand. Here, feel this right here.
Oh, yes. What happened there?
I fell down a mine shaft. Yeah, I was running. Didn't see it. Just didn't see it. Just bosh, trip, bosh, whack! Oh, and it was serious, too. Because it was in the same place when my mum threw me in the sink.
When was this? When your mum threw you in the sink?
A kid. Little, obviously. When she could still get away with it.
Now we're getting into something.
Yeah.
Discoveries are made. How early in the play is this?
About halfway.
About halfway through.
Yeah.
At what point did we encounter Ralph for the first time?
Oh, right. At the beginning, we see Ralph basically out on the street, sort of stalking his prey.
Doing his thing.
Yeah.
The play is called Frozen by Brian E. Lavery at Parkland Theater. And I was going to say, you'll have a great time, but you'll have a profound time, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
One of those things people will talk about when they leave.
Absolutely. It's the kind of a piece that if you're at all interested in psychology or psychiatry or the human brain, or if you love watching Nancy Grace and hearing these stories, it kind of is that whole spectrum. Police officers will engage with this. Anyone who's ever, any parent certainly will engage with this. Anyone who's ever thought, what would make someone do something like that? This play asks those questions. Is it childhood abuse? Is it that he was born this way? Was he shaped to be this kind of a person? This character has no remorse. None. He simply does these things, and he doesn't see them as wrong. He says, the only thing I regret is that it's not legal. Killing little girls. And he's not trying to be scary. That's just his essential nature. And I think it's a really interesting study of when he encounters the mother and how they get along after 20 years.
That we're going to leave for the real event.
Right.
Show opens next Wednesday, the 18th. It runs through the 29th. Check the Parkland website for complete times and all the days. There's a few that are skipped here and there. It's theater-parkland.edu. Randy Hard is the artistic director of Parkland Theater and retiring after this season and is the director of this play. Jeanette Jerzyk is as Agneta, the investigator. And Brad Mertens as Ralph, the serial killer. And Diane Pritchard as Nancy, the mum. And the non-speaking role, who I last saw in West Side Story there in Parkland, Zach Benner as the guard. Thank you all very much for coming in, and best of luck with the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Stay tuned next for some live performances here by a duo of brothers called Manzanita Bones. They're going to be at Memphis on Main with some other bands tomorrow night. That's in downtown Champaign, tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. Our program today is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, welcoming the Moscow Festival Ballet January 24th, 25th, and 26th for enchanting performances of Swan Lake and The Sleeping Beauty. More information is available at krannertcenter.com. Thank you. And that was called Stump Grinder by the Sanctified Grumblers, name of the band, and their CD called No Lie. They've been on our show before, and they may even have been in town to play at the club where our next guests will be playing tomorrow night. It's at Memphis on Main, downtown Champaign. Nioga Blacksmith is on that show, The Devout Sinners also, and my guests today who are a duo called Manzanita Bones. They are the brothers, Sky and Kyle Wisher, and currently residents of Old Hickory, Tennessee. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
And thanks to our intern for the show, Jason Hayes, for letting me know about you. I guess you guys have known Jason, forever?
Yeah, as long as we can remember, probably.
How did you get to know? So. You grew up around here or from around here?
Grew up in Cisco, Illinois.
And went various ways, including teaching English in Sky's case currently?
Yeah, that's right. I teach English at Trevecca Nazarene University in Nashville. So I'm an adjunct there, and I've taught a couple classes at other schools around, too.
And Kyle?
I'm what we call a box jockey. Work in a shipping and receiving dock.
I was going to say, I didn't know what a box jockey was. I'm going to add that to my list of occupations for itinerant musicians who also do other things. Box jockey. I learned a term yesterday for the first time called the sofa circuit or something like that. Somebody who doesn't have a particular home and goes from couch to couch or something like that. So how long and why did you get into the singer-songwriting thing, especially together?
Well, Kyle moved down to Nashville about, 7 years ago?
Yeah.
And since then, we've been playing music together, writing songs. We're pretty close. He lives in my basement, so it makes it convenient for late night songs and that sort of thing.
I'm going to say that could potentially be too close for comfort unless you happen to be really close.
Yeah,
which
that's true.
You obviously are. Well, why don't we just get an idea right away of what you sound like? What would you like to start with?
A song called No Liza Browning.
I didn't think to tell you, but I'm rolling on. Yeah, thanks for your advice, but I got my own. I'm gonna leave my winter coat, but once my boots are strong, I'll leave a ghost in your parlor here and go to meet the dawn. By tomorrow, love, you'll be gone. Away, off in your looking glass. And by tomorrow, love, I'll be gone. I didn't think to tell you, I wrote you a song. It ain't no Liza Browning, it's just a love gone wrong. Just blood on a notebook page, mud on the wall, barbed wire on a ribcage, a fist in the jaw. Just blood on a notebook page, mud on the wall,
No Liza Browning, a song by Sky and Kyle Wisher as Manzanita Bones.
Yeah, you'll have to forgive the creakiness. I've got a bit of a cold, so.
Well, it's going around. I mean, Randy Hardwick just in here. She's got one going on, and I don't have one going on, but I still have a really dry throat. I have a little trouble getting the voice out here myself today. Where does your name come from, by the way? meaning the band name.
The manzanita is kind of a tangled, rooty-looking bear tree that grows out west, kind of shrub-looking, and it kind of tangles with itself and seems to be struggling against itself. And manzanita bones is a term that we picked up somewhere along the way, because especially in the winter, you can kind of, they look like bones, basically. The branches are kind of a pale white sort of ivory sort of color, and we thought that was an appropriate title for the sort of conflicted music that we sing. So.
And yeah, there's something about a plant that's actually growing that kind of looks dead. So it's something that's life and death. And
right. It looks dead, and it also looks upside down. So yeah. All of those kind of ambiguities and contradictions, that's kind of where our music ends up going.
Why is that?
Well, I don't know.
We just had a discussion about a play that's a psychological drama. It sounds like your songs are psychological dramas.
This guy has a background in psychology. But.
Yeah. We both grew up in a pretty conservative religious family, and we're still religious people, but we're not people without questions, and I think that's where a lot of this sort of conflict stuff comes from. That, you know, as some people might see faith as a way to kind of organize their lives or kind of be hopeful about things, we also kind of feel the flip side of that, to where God is in some ways threatening. I mean, if you look through the Old Testament or even the New Testament, Ananias and Sapphira, that sort of thing, God can be scary. And, you know, the kind of mysteriousness of it as well. We try to kind of express that through our songs by kind of putting them off into certain characters with their own stories and conflicts.
God can not only be scary in the Old Testament, he does some outright bad things.
Yeah, yeah.
By his own standards, which makes for a conflict in itself. And there's some, you know, there was some pretty graphic images. We were talking again in that previous segment about what people think is appropriate to show in a play or to go see on the television or whatever. And these had some of those images that you do see. Where do those come from? I'm thinking about in the, you know, the blood on the page and the in the refrain where seemed a bit of a surprise given some of the rest of the song, although not necessarily in the sound of the song,
okay,
which had its own personality.
Yeah, basically, I think we try to make our lyrics grounded in real stuff, I guess, try to make them concrete, such that, you know, there's a Bon Iver song that came out on an album a year or two ago, and he discusses or sings about kind of a troubled love relationship as like rope burns. We're kind of, this song is similar to that, that there's a kind of physicality to a love and to a loss of love and to these sorts of heart-rending things that if you can actually ground them in physical sensations and images that kind of depict that, I think they're more effective rather than to talk about
barbed wire and a rib cage. Really did it for me.
Yeah,
that was an uncomfortable feeling.
It's not a place where you want barbed wire.
Not exactly. So you wrote write most of the lyrics, Sky.
Right. Yeah.
And Kyle, does that imply that you write most of the tunes, or is that come together?
We come together. I kind of help edit the lyrics from time to time. And we both record, we have little voice recorders that we pass around. So if Sky's doing the dishes or something, he'll just hum out a few bars of a melody, and then I'll come up with the backing accompaniment to that.
But you start with the words?
Usually we start with either Kyle's got some guitar part he wants to record, or I am playing with my kids and I happen to hum a tune that sounds nice. And then give that little couple seconds to Kyle. He writes some music for it and then gives it back to me along with the idea that I gave him because it's most likely I forgot about it. And then we compose lyrics to go with that and kind of build a song that way.
And usually
add layers.
Yeah, the lyrics tend to have something to do with the way the song sounds too. It's kind of, they're connected that way, I think.
What do your kids think of your songs?
They like them. My kids are young, so they're almost, well, one's 3.5 and one's almost 6. So I think that's before that period when thinking about death is uncomfortable. So if they hear a mention of somebody thinking about death or talking about death, they have questions about it rather than attempting to repress it because dying is already scary. So in that sense, I've really enjoyed having kids, not so I can talk to them about death or anything, but that idea that they're still kind of a purity when it comes to talking about difficult things that they're curious about. They shouldn't have to repress or suppress themselves from asking questions, talking about things, expressing themselves how they want to.
So do they ever just come up and say, "Hey, Daddy, what does that mean?"
No, not really.
They don't listen that closely.
they like the fast songs mostly, and they dance to them. So I'm glad somebody's dancing to them.
Yeah, they respond gutturally to something that has a good beat.
Or... Do you have one of those for us? Looking at the list.
Yeah. We've got a weird one called Over Jordan. We were going to finish with that, but we can go ahead and do that if you want.
You can take them in the order you want. I'm just sort of trying to roll here with the conversation.
Speaking of kids, though, if we do Sinks Full of Dishes, which is the song we had next on the list, it's I'll let you explain the point of view.
The first song we did was based on a male character who's got trouble and is running away. The second one is kind of the effects of that on the female character, that she's now left with kids and a house and people's sympathy. So that's where this next one comes from.
So we really do need to do these in sequence then. Yeah. Right, you've got it planned out. This is Sky and Kyle Wisher as Manzanita Bones, the name of their two-guy band. They're going to be at Memphis on Main in downtown Champaign Saturday night, tomorrow night at 9 p.m., along with Neoga Blacksmith, and the Devout Sinners, and you're hearing them live in our studio on Live and Local.
Stain that spreads across the morning. I spent another night wishing I'd not been born or born again. The baby cry as I wash and dry the dishes pile in a rusty sink. I look outside and wish it was night. Ain't it odd that that's all that I can think? Another dirty diaper, another table set with corn and beans. Another bout of hollers and a string of things that I don't mean. I But church people pray and have nice things to say about a feller that paid the price for me. And I look outside and wish it was night. Ain't it odd that that's all that I can see? Well, you left me waiting with my gnarled heart in this ridiculous tattoo. These are your babies wailing, and I'm a few bullets shy of what I like to do.
Manzanita Bones here on Live and Local, and I actually don't remember the name of the song, if you said it.
Sinks Full of Dishes.
You did say that. Oh, right. Sinks Full of Dishes. Skye and Kyle Wisher, they'll be at Memphis on Main in downtown Champaign tomorrow night at 9 p.m. And I am curious, Skye, you make a point in the biographical material that Jason gave me ahead of time of talking a bit about your various academic pursuits, which have been sort of varied, including psychology, religion, film, critical theory of... never quite sure what that means. That can mean a lot of things, I guess.
It's basically an application
Of course.
Philosophy to interpretation, critical theory.
Did the songwriting interest come first? Did all these other things come first? And how did they... how much have you found your academic pursuits showing up in the words?
Quite a bit. I guess music came first, obviously, because in high school, music is cool. So that's an obvious draw for a teenager.
And probably the weirder the music in high school, the cooler it is. You're going to make it yourself anyway.
That's probably true.
For some people, for some kids.
Yeah. But I've always kind of written poetry since I can remember. So I guess those interests align with the lyrics and producing that sort of thing. I guess more broadly, I wrote my dissertation on the grotesque, which is a literary theory basically invested in exploring conflicts, the opposition of opposite things, kind of contradicting one another. And it's interested in that space where you get revulsion and delight at the same time. So I think that's kind of in some ways become the lens through which I see a lot of things. It's hard not to see both sides and both sides simultaneously. And I think that the music kind of lines up with that. Also, I guess for my own interest and fun, I throw in some literary references here and there just for giggles, I guess. I don't know that...
See who gets them?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't think that many people have heard us, but yeah.
So you haven't had a lot of reviews to pore over and see, hey, did they really get my song? Did they get that reference or not?
Yeah, just my wife. You know, she reviews them sometimes.
Is she a harsh critic?
No, but she's very supportive, but also constructive. If she thinks there's something we could do differently or better, we have this sort of relationship where it doesn't hurt my feelings for her to tell me, so.
So rather than your kids saying, what does that mean, Daddy, she might say, what the does that mean?
Yes, something like that, yeah.
And she is the first person to request that I give her copies of the songs she likes so she can play them as much as she wants.
Yeah.
She's our biggest fan.
Speaking of, do you have any CDs available yet or not?
We have some CDs that we're giving away at the show on Saturday. But we don't have, we have some albums constructed, but we don't have any sort of label backing or anything. Most of our, I think we have some 40 songs up on a Facebook page. So those are free for downloading for anyone who's interested.
So you're not in this to make money, sounds like.
No. No, I'm afraid not.
Yeah, a sad number of singer-songwriters probably, though they might like to be in it to make money, would probably have to admit the same thing, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true.
The way things go. In a moment, I'll mention some other things people can go see and hear live, and then we're going to hear that weird song you were talking about from right. Manzanita Bones. Our program today on Live and Local is made possible by Parkland College Theater, presenting the dramatic thriller Frozen from Wednesday, January 18th through Sunday, January 29th. Frozen explores the intricate relationships between a criminal psychologist, a grief-stricken mother, and a serial killer. Adult language and themes are in that play. Information and reservations can be made at 351-2528. We also have support today from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wine tastings on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. This Saturday, it's a tasting of wines that are Rhones or reminiscent of the region, followed by live music from 7 to 9 by Desafinado. And let's see, today is Friday. Oh, it is Friday the 13th. How about that, everybody? That means that these folks are going to be in our area this evening. Feud and Hillbillies are at the Cowboy Monkey in downtown Champaign. That's at 9 o'clock. The Dan Rivero Trio are at Robbie's Restaurant in Springfield this evening at 5:30. Dan Hubbard is at Bentley's Pub in Champaign this evening at 7. Springfield Theater Center presents the play Chess at Hoagland Center in Springfield tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock, Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. Station Theater in Urbana presents Gruesome Playground Injuries tonight and tomorrow at and Sunday at 8 o'clock, and that continues for a while. It's the Weasel Dreams Sextet at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 5 o'clock. Lamont Parsons Experiment at Bouvant's in Urbana this evening at 7 o'clock. The Big Creek Guitar Band, who were on our show earlier this week, at Huber's in Champaign tonight at 8. An Evening with Your Mother, Endless Pages, and Jack Johnston are at Clark Bar in Champaign this evening at 6:30. The Gavin Stolte Project, featuring our own Mike Pritchard, our sound engineer, is at Memphis on Main in Champaign tonight at 8 o'clock. And the Diva and the Dude are at the Pink House in Ogden this evening at 5 o'clock. And you'll have to look up what's going on Saturday and Sunday. I will mention the fellow who was on our show yesterday, Todd Snyder, with Ashley Flynn, will be at the Hoagland Center in Springfield tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. You're listening to 90.9 WYLFM and HD Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Manzanita Bones, what would you guys like to go out with? This weird song you promised us.
Yeah, this song is called Over Jordan, and we kind of describe it as an Appalachian apocalypse song. So if you can imagine John the Revelator as kind of a 20th century backwoods fella from the mountains, he might tell you something like this song. So
we'll give it a go. Sky and Kyle, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Thanks for having us.
Did you hear about the moon? Did you hear about the moon? Did you hear about
it turned to blood. Scarecrow.